As is often the case, I never really know where I'm going with the sermon until I write it. And today's sermon was ostensibly about blooming where you're planted, and it ended up being a lot about blooming where we're planted here on this earth, in this body, in this broken and confusing state of life that is the only one we have. And so our reading today is a poem by Mary Oliver that's all about being in this body, living on this earth, making the best difference we can here and now. She calls it simply Poem. Poem by Mary Oliver. The spirit likes to dress up like this. 10 fingers, 10 toes, shoulders, and all the rest. At night, in the black branches, in the morning, in the blue branches of the world. It could float, of course, but would rather plumb rough matter. Airy and shapeless thing, the spirit needs the metaphor of the body. Lime and appetite, the oceanic fluids, it needs this body's world. Instinct and imagination and the dark hug of time. Sweetness and tangibility. It needs these things to be understood, to be more than pure light that burns where no one is. And so the spirit enters us in the morning, shines from brute comfort like a stitch of lightning, and at night lights up the deep and wondrous drownings of the body. Like a star. We are vehicles of the Spirit. The Spirit needs the metaphor of the body. We are in every way blooming right here in this body, in this life, where we have been planted. When I had just graduated college some years back, my sister, who's 2 years older than me, my big sister, she and I decided that we were going to be brave and bold and we were going to move to the big city, which to us was Chicago. We decided that even though we probably couldn't handle it alone, we could certainly handle it together. And so we teamed up and it was us against the world, you know, and we were ready to explore the whole crazy mess of living in that grand metropolis. We really knew that we needed each other, and somehow, if we stuck together, Chicago, Illinois would not defeat the McDonald sisters. Now, I should clarify at this point that the McDonald sisters being defeated by a grand metropolis by Chicago seemed entirely likely because we are, at our core, two country girls from southern Indiana. We were there in our early 20s. We were completely broke. Completely ensconced in this same hopeless optimism that we both fight to maintain now, and we had no idea whatsoever what we were doing. So when we looked for an apartment that we could afford, we found ourselves going in the direction of neighborhoods that smarter and more experienced people would have judiciously avoided, and landlords described many of these neighborhoods, including the one that we ended up living in, a neighborhood where drug dealers sat on their front porches selling crack. They described it as neighborly and community-oriented and full of character. People don't stay in their houses like they do in the suburbs. This is what we heard, and we loved it. We thought, it really is colorful and full of character. It's the grand adventure. I remember when we first visited there, I stopped a young woman who had a teardrop tattooed on her cheek, and I asked her, "How do you like the neighborhood?" And she looked at me like I was an alien, and she asked if I had a light. And since it was the cheapest apartment available, it was almost a mile to public transportation, my sister and I were determined that what we were going to do was employ our bright white leather with pink wheel roller skates to get back and forth from the subway. And our plan involved strapping on our skates every morning, packing our lunches, her in a pink plastic lunchbox, and mine in a canvas bag with kitties and flowers on it, which said, bloom where you were planted. And we were going to, carrying our lunches and our pink-wheeled roller skates, we were going to roller skate to the subway, greet everyone with a smile, give every homeless person quarters out of these specially made pocketbooks we had, and we were going to show that woman with that teardrop tattoo that she didn't have to be so sad, and maybe if we worked up some courage, we'd take egg salad sandwiches to the crack dealers, and we were going to bring sunshine to this corner of Chicago's North Side gangland territory. Now, it didn't take long for a lot of things to happen. It didn't take long for our friends to stop visiting us because they kept getting frisked by the cops because they thought they were there to buy drugs, and until our roller skates got shoved in the closet, and until we were so overwhelmed by the sheer numbers of drug addicts that we actually couldn't stop for all of them. It didn't take long until the heat went off in our building in the middle of February, and the slum landlords let us and the marginalized families all around us go cold for about 2 weeks in the coldest weeks of the year. It didn't take long until my sister saw a drive-by shooting waiting at the bus stop, until we finally figured out that a teardrop tattoo symbolized a loved one dead from gang violence. It didn't take long until our little corner of gangland got to be too much for us, and our hopeful dictum printed on my happy floral lunch bag, bloom where you are planted, felt like more than we could possibly handle. For how could we, or any of our neighbors, bloom, let alone grow, in a place where the world felt that threatening? How could you bloom when that girl with the teardrop tattoo might never get out of there? When babies had no heat, when we had no heat, when everything was scary, our once hopeful and optimistic little Southern Indiana eyes that greeted everybody with a smile started to do what everyone else's eyes did there. They looked down, trying to shut out all the frightening aspects of this dangerous world that closes in on so many people. But we didn't want to become one of those folks who never look up. We didn't want to be so scared that we couldn't see the world around us. We didn't want to be so self-protected and isolated that we couldn't engage in the work at hand. And in those months, in the cold grip of the winter, in the even colder grip of reality, we adopted a kind of mantra, and we would say it all the time. We repeated it over and over when we were walking to the store. We reminded each other of it before we left in the morning, before we went to bed at night. It wasn't a grand or esoteric mantra, but it worked. It was simply this. This is where we are, and this is what we're doing. This is where we are, and this is what we're doing. When I got that look of fear in my eyes, and I wasn't sure I could manage it all, my sister Kara would take both of my hands in hers. She would look at me, and she would say, Nancy, this is where we are, and this is what we're doing. And I got up, and I went out the door, and I did what I was supposed to do. I got up, and I did it, and that silly little mantra gave us so much strength there in that frightening time. It was somehow an admission that this life, the life that we are living, the life that we often live in strange and scary places, this life was our own. Here we are, it said. Not only can we do this, we are doing this. This is what we are, and this is what we're doing. I've thought about that mantra over the years, and I repeat it still when I'm afraid. I repeat it sometimes when I have to get up here and talk in front of you guys. This is where I am, and this is what I'm doing. But I hadn't thought of it in a while until last week, until my phone, like all of yours, lit up with all those phone calls and the television blared the horrible news. 33 dead in Blacksburg. You don't need me to blare the news at you again. Devastation and unimaginable darkness. Questions without answers. Teardrops tattooed on the souls of mothers and fathers and families and children all over this country. How do you like living in the neighborhood? When the news came, last Monday, it was piled on for me and piled on for all of us with so many other devastations of this place and our time and history. 33 dead in Blacksburg, God knows how many dead in Iraq. Innocent civilians tortured in Afghanistan, walls being built all over the Middle East to separate families and sworn enemies from one another. Baghdad looking ever more like Belfast. And the terrible barriers I saw with my own eyes when we went to Israel and Palestine just a couple months ago, the barriers between people that seemed so impossible to break down. Last week, Virginia and America and the global community of which we are a part started to feel an awful lot like that Chicago gangland ghetto. Somebody turned off the heat of justice and compassion and mercy, and the slum landlords of empires like ours won't turn it back on again. A young boy's soul was missing, so utterly missing, so utterly absent that he thought he was a martyr instead of a murderer, and nobody knew him well enough to tell him otherwise. And in the middle of it all, we cannot but notice that the eyes of the world are cast down away from the beseeching multitudes in sorrow and resignation. The eyes of the world are cast down, trying not to look at the suffering of so many because we fear perhaps we can't handle it. Suddenly, suburban DC and college campuses are just as frightening as any gang-infested drug den ever was in urban Chicago. And I feel that same old fear again. How are we to do what must be done when the world around us is so threatening? How are we to do what must be done when we are cold and scared and we have no answers? And if she could, I wish my big sister could take all of our hands and look in our eyes and say what she said to me back then, "This is where we are, and this is what we're doing. This is where we are, and this is what we're doing." When we lived in that scary place, it would have been easier to dream of being someplace else, to have imagined ourselves safely anywhere but there. But we weren't someplace else. And casually dreaming of another place would have been just that, casually dreaming. Kara and I don't have very grand lives, but we did have things to do. We had to do them right there where we were, and so we had our mantra. And so we tried the best we could to look up from the sidewalk and see our world again. Now, in this time, in this global ghetto of violence, racism, oppression, here we are. Though this world is frightening, though the pressures are many, though the answers are few, here we are. And though we cannot fix it all, and our ideals are awash in an ocean of sorrows, what we must do, we are doing, we are capable of doing. This is where we are, and this is what we're doing. This sadness is our sadness, this outrage our own. And yet every step and every breath is an admission that a broken and frightening world cannot and will not overcome our ability to carry on and do the work of justice that is laid out before us. This is where we are, no place else. No other time in history, no other age in history. We have no other task than to offer some hope in this particular darkness. No other job than to actively mine this broken world for all the hope and healing we can scratch from its surface. This is where we are. There's no other. Because once one sees with loving eyes, they understand that the ghetto doesn't just hold down the poor, that the shedding of innocent blood doesn't just affect the residents of distant lands, and the burden of sorrow is not the cross that other people are made to bear. This is where we are in this always broken and sometimes miraculous world of sorrow and joy. There is no other, and thus it is here. In this flesh and on this good soil, in these frightening times, that we are called to act and to hope. You all know that there are religious folks all over the world, from every stripe, whose theology invites them to dream of being someplace else. A better place. A place in which all this suffering will be ended and the bitter pill will be eternally swallowed by other people. There are those who are so afraid of this world that they need to explain away human violence and brokenness as a temporary condition designed just long enough to gain one's wings and fly away to some Valhalla in the sky. There are those who think that if a person can keep their head down and try not to see the suffering around them, they can make it to that better place safe and sound. But there are also religious people of every denomination, every creed, every color, every stripe who do not want to live that way. There are people of every stripe, including us, who have too many things to do. This is where we are. Right here with 10 fingers and 10 toes. Mary Oliver said it perfectly. The Spirit plumbs this rough matter. It cleaves to this flesh and blood of ours, inhabits a body and a world that is far from perfect, but that just might be the only one we'll ever need. The Spirit does not need us to wait for some heavenly neither world. We have too much to do right here to spend our time dreaming of someplace else. Heaven will take care of itself. We must take care of now. We are not slogging through all of this brokenness, waiting with fear and passivity till we get where we belong. This is where we belong. This is where the work is to be done. We are not so frightened as to dream of escape or retreat, not so frightened as to turn our eyes downward to our shoes. This embodied, flawed, fleshly world full of pain, the Spirit dwells here. In our hands and hearts. For me, that little mantra, this is where we are, this is what we're doing, it helped me banish the two most obviously crippling responses that human beings have when the world gets scary. Those two responses we have seen on all kinds of levels, all across the global and local community, and they are fear and anger. Saying those little words became a way that I promised I wouldn't be overcome by my fear. This is where we are. We won't be driven into the protective shadows of isolation. We won't be closed off from the challenges of the world because we're afraid. And this is what we're doing. We will not respond to devastation by becoming angry, by merely hating others, by just judging campus security or stereotyping whole religious or ethnic groups. This is where we are, and this is what we're doing. This is the state of the world in which we live, in which we are called to serve, and no act of retribution or hatred will fix that. And so if we cannot respond to the devastation with anything so simple as fear and anger, we must respond with something more powerful. Our own hands and our own lives. When my sister held my hands, she did it to encourage me to put one foot in front of the other, get out of that doorway and face the day. She told me to do what I needed to do. And if we cannot respond to fear and anger, with fear and anger, we must respond with our whole selves. We must raise our eyes from the sidewalk and look at this world with all of its terrors and its joys. Head on. There's a poem I've always loved by John Keats. Now, John Keats in this poem is basically being a totally roguish, charming card. He's trying to convince this young woman to probably sleep with him. But the poem comes across as saying that one should live their life to the fullest now in this moment. And though Keats is not to be trusted with the ladies, no one could accuse him of letting life pass by, and it captures something so important. He calls it this living hand. This living hand, now warm and capable of earnest grasping, were, if it were cold and in the icy silence of the tomb, so haunt thy days and chill thy dreaming nights that thou wouldst wish thine own heart dry of blood, so in my veins red life might stream again. But be thou conscience calmed. See, here it is. I hold it towards you. Basically, Keats, that roguish charmer, is saying, yeah, babe, I'll be dead someday. Someday all this craziness will be over, but I ain't dead yet, and look. My hands are right here, and while I live and while I breathe, we need not be afraid to live life as fully as we dare. This is where we are. No other world. If we are to take joy in life and bring light to the darkness, nothing's stopping us. Looking back now, I remember that time in Chicago with a mixture of emotions. We got through it. We got through it just like we said we would. I got up every day, and I went to seminary, and I ended up here. And my sister got up every day and worked minimum wage jobs just long enough to find her own calling in life. And she now lives just a few blocks away from that rapidly gentrifying ghetto where a Starbucks recently opened on the corner. I'm sure that woman with the teardrop tattoo has been forced out by the influx of yuppies into new low-income neighborhoods with the same old problems. She really might never get out. The questions do not have answers. But we lived life as fully as we could there when so many things frightened us, and maybe that woman did too. Despite it all, we did bloom where we were planted for a time. My cutesy little canvas bag with its optimistic message that once seemed too damn cheerful to carry anymore ended up being prophetic. Bloom where you are planted, it said. Grow and blossom and renew the life of the earth right where you are. Bloom. Don't just take shallow root in this rocky and fearful soil and hang on for dear life until you're transplanted somewhere else. Bloom. Here. Despite it all, this frightening and flawed world is the place in which we are called to live and serve. And I know this world is overwhelming. I know the news is almost all bad, and I know the ghetto of violence won't go away, that death surrounds us in this reality. But living hands reach out to hold us. And there is good work to be done in the midst of this sorrow. Let us be boldly unafraid. Let us blossom and bloom and grow as high as we dare. This is where we are. And this is what we're doing. Amen.